God bless you, Phil Turney. And folks, what a special show this has been. Paul, thank you for that hot, hot breaking news about Marine Le Pen. What a day.
Well, that's if these numbers hold, this is a big upset. And you know, what Fillon said, you know, was basically he's throwing his support in the next round. Or there's something he can do about the voting today. But I don't imagine that's a surprise, but it is treacherous.
Well, folks, with all of that, we'll say so long and see you tomorrow night on the Trump Phenomenon.
Elizabeth McCabe, a.k.a. Lucky One of Truth Frequency News. I wanted to tell you all about Extendivite from HeartDrop.com. Y'all know I check everything before I air it. When I heard about Extendivite on TFR, I went to HeartDrop.com and started my research. It's got cayenne. That's good for blood and circulation. It stimulates the blood flow. It's got garlic, which fights bacteria like antibiotics, and it lowers the cholesterol and blood pressure. It also has milk thistle, which is the best detox for liver. I couldn't wait to try it out, and I'm glad I did 4 months ago. And here's obvious results. My hands and feet don't get cold anymore. The varicose veins have faded too. My wrists don't hurt after typing all day. Now I tell you all this because it's true and I want you to really live life. Try Extendivite. Go to heartdrop.com and order it.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Evening, wherever you be in the world. This is Ralph Kermit Winterowe II coming to you with the Ralph Winterowe Show live out of Alaska. And in the second hour, I'm going to talk about some cases that are pending that are just The one in the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals, the mandamus for Rappert in Minnesota, and what we learned out of a case where a guy decided not to follow through, but that's fine. Everybody's got to make their choices, but what we got out of challenging the state of Minnesota for being, and I think it's called a vassal state. That's a, I found that out. I was looking up under the Ottoman Empire. Vassal state, somebody that they allow a little bit of independence, but they're still under the big boy. And that's what all of these states are by this Citizen of the United States stuff. But anyway, before I get into that, I have traffic issues I want to cover, notice of deficiency. See, once we find out what's the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals, which, like I say, I'll be talking about the second hour, once they make a ruling in Randy Kirkendall's case, and if they don't, we're going to start filing into the Federal Court of Claims. And there is a way in there, and they don't make it easy to find. But I think we've found the door, and it's just absolutely amazing. And it was a hard one to find, but we got them stuck. They've been sitting there since it took a month to get it into the Federal Court of Appeals, Federal Circuit Court of Appeals from out of the Fifth Circuit. And it's been sitting there since the 30th. And today is what, the 23rd? So 24 days it's been sitting there. They have not ruled. And the DOJ lost their boilerplate nonsense for a reply, which is really unusual. But I want to go over a notice of deficiency issue. And then I want to go over, I haven't done this for a while, is traffic. What happens if a cop comes up and says, get out of the car? What do you do? Do you have to get out of the car? Yes or no? What do you do? And I'll tell you some of the things I've done in the past. But let's start off with this notice of deficiency. This is one that somebody's got that's live right now. And they're all basically the same thing. How do you go about tackling a notice of deficiency? What do you do? Who does it apply to? Well, this one, the guy's name, of course, it's all caps. If you have an initial, they'll never put a period after it. But this one says Tax Form 1040. Really? Tax Form 1040. Tax year. It says below it. See, it doesn't say taxable year. Now, there are several hooks that they are mandated to use. Taxable year gets them into Subtitle A. They do not want to go there. They have to use taxable year. So that would be one of the questions. Are you talking about the taxable year of some thing? Because, you see, I got to find the, put this all of them up here together, is when you go into the definitions, taxable year hooks them. And how does it hook them? Because, you see, there is an issue. Oh, that's interesting. I saved this. I don't know what's... I like Bill Gates' stuff. I get around and a word, and you're supposed to save everything in a doc file, and it uses an RTF default. I have no idea why that happens. Like to call him up and chew on him, but it wouldn't do any good. What is taxable year? Why? See, there's several key things, definitions. The way to deal with these people, traffic, all of them, is terms. There's a jurisdictional issue, but there's terms. And if this is, I was just looking back trying to find some of the traffic citations that I got. I got about 150 or 170 of those in a couple of years. I was really a busy boy. And I was really taking them on. And I finally found that the solution, and the solution was so simple about why I didn't own my car. What's turned me on? Well, let's get back to, let me stick to one thing here. Let's stick to IRS. Taxable year is a definition that must be used. Taxpayer is a definition that must be used. Withholding agent. Who's going to withhold? Imagine starting a trial and saying to the and getting it on the record that all terms must be disclosed prior to the trial, or if any term is used, it is mandated that said term shall be put on the record. Otherwise, the testimony is irrelevant. And what would I rely upon to do that? Means. I have a module on means. And when I found this, where we were off to the races, this is Grohman versus Commissioner, 302 U.S. 82, 1937. It says, when an exclusive definition is intended, the word means is employed. Exclusive. I got all kinds of cases on it. This is how we lose. One of the ways we lose. Not the only way, but they're talking general usage language on traffic, code violations, all this stuff. IRS. How come we don't know that? How come the attorneys don't know that? How come they won't bring it up? I have not a dang clue. I know some of the stuff they can't bring up because I've got it from several different sources that there's limits to what they can do. And they can't cross those limits because if they do, they would be in trouble. And I tell you, if you've ever listened to somebody talk and go, is listen to Trey Gowdy. Out of, he is absolutely amazing. That guy is just, he is so sharp. I mean, he took that commissioner of the IRS and he took him and just chewed him up and spit him out by listening. And it's called Spoilation of Evidence. They do not disclose evidence. And if it's destroyed or not brought forward for whatever reason, it's to be inferred that it is helpful to you. And this is what this Lois Lerner from the IRS did, and this is what this commissioner did. Oh, we don't think, we can't find this stuff. And then he said, well, there's no evidence of any criminal wrongdoing. And what did Trey Gowdy come back? And what statutes did you analyze? And he backed him, finally into a corner. Well, I didn't. So how do you know there's no criminal, if you don't have a statute? And all statutes, the thing that, all code, everything has to have essential elements to prove it. There are essential elements, and you'll find a lot of those in some of the tort stuff in like Black's Fourth, if you have a Black's Fourth. I have it all on PDF. And you go word search it. Look for the essential elements. These are the things with which any one of them missing means they cannot convict. There's essential elements for civil, and there's essential elements for criminal. So, in this, means, this is a killer. Always look for means, or some of the other ones, or they've worded it around, but it's still the essential element. Some of these states are trying to get away from means, but the federal government uses means all the time in their definitions. But it's exclusive use of the term of the word means is employed. It's got to be exclusive. So objection, stand, what's your objection? Foundation, you've used a term. It does not, I don't know what it means. You've got to put it on the record. Does this person over here know what it means? No. Your testimony is irrelevant until we find out what this term means. If you ever sit in on a murder trial, you could see this. They come in and they go at great lengths explaining DNA and all kinds of words that they use on how a person died or whatever. Do you see that with IRS? You know what they bring in? An expert from the IRS to explain to the jury. Wow, really? And yeah, I can't make this stuff up. It is so ludicrous when you finally see through this ruse, this con job. So anyway, getting back to this, let me get back to this notice of deficiency. It says tax year. Well, it's got to be a taxable year, so that would be one of the first questions. It says, dear taxpayer, really? Who made a determination that I'm a taxpayer? Who did that? You see, only if you file a return can they do what's called the power of inquisition. court said so. You have to sign up. Otherwise, I can't go there. You have to make, that's one of the issues with Rappert's up there. They can only audit a tax return that Rappert would have filled out, but he didn't fill out one. Oh, we can't talk about that. That's what makes vassal state really work well, because these states are basically a little bit of independence under the, quote, fictional United States of America, which is Congress, sovereign body politic. I got it in two briefs. Filed by the DOJ. United States of America, sovereign body politic. Because the states have no standing in the Constitution. We the people keep signing up. It's like Esau in the Bible. Except he gave his birth right away and it was done. Or us down here, we keep have to sign up to keep getting benefits. So it says, dear taxpayer and dear deficiency. And then they say, well, we've made a determination. Do they have judicial power? No. They're saying you want to go to tax court. Got decisions by the Supreme Court. Why would I go to tax court? It says there is no judicial determination. And in the 1940s, they changed it from the tax board appeal or something like that to court so that they wouldn't have to abide by the regulations. They said if it's court, we don't have to abide by regulations. And the Supreme Court said there's no judicial determination. So why would I go there? It's already, you've already admitted that you, I mean, I had to go prove all these things. I wanted to prove them, and I've got proof of them, evidence. So one of the first things that I would look at is, okay, what's the deficiency? It says there's a deficiency, right? Okay, well, okay, I give up. So what is a deficiency? It's defined. It's in 26 U.S.C. Well, I got to get around here and turn that on. I got to make it a doc file so I can see the highlighting. Me and old Gates. What does it say a deficiency means? It says the term, this is 26 U.S.C. 6211. The term deficiency means the amount by which a tax imposed by what? Subtitle A or B or chapters 41, 42, 43, and 44 exceeds the amount shown of the tax by the taxpayer upon his return. Now, what do you think you could get out of that? He must, his return. That's, there's got to be a return, right? And they call him a taxpayer. And there's Subtitle A, B, and chapters 41, 42, 43, and 44. I have never yet seen a lawyer go after what subtitle are we talking about. Never. Why? Do they not know? There's five types of taxes. Why don't they go after that? I don't have a dang clue. You would think that at some point, they go after this willful failure to file nonsense, which is smoke and mirrors nonsense. Means absolutely, you're just willful. How do you prove willful? A law is willfully, you say I willfully did not murder this person? You got to be kidding me. Come on now. Give me a break. I'm looking for the definition here. I didn't get that one done yet for some reason, of your willful failure to file. And what is that one? That is, let's see, 7203. Here it is right here. Willful failure to file a return or supply information. Any person required another to pay an estimated tax or tax by regulations, blah, 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 and it goes on. Well, if you go into the essential elements, one of them, there has to exist a deficiency. You can't have a willful failure to file without an essential element. There must exist a deficiency. Okay, so we're back to the definition. So what's the deficiency? Subtitle A, Subtitle B, in these four chapters. Well, chapters 40, 1, 2, 3, and 4, those are about miscellaneous excise taxes of public charities, public foundations, qualified pensions, and qualified investment stuff. So that's irrelevant. Okay, what's subtitle B? Gifts. Did I give somebody give some money and didn't pay a tax on it? No, they're not. They won't charge that. Do you know why? Because, you see, it's further down the road, because if taxable year limits it. But so what's subtitle A? What is subtitle A? That's individual income tax. Individual income tax. So how would we deal with that? If it's an individual income tax, what's that mean? Better have something. They just can't make this stuff up, can they? Yes, they can, because we do not understand the language. When you go into, the taxable year definition, there's got to be a taxable year. It says the term taxable year means the calendar year upon which the basis of a taxable income is completed under Subtitle A. It limits it only to Subtitle A. So there's no Subtitle B, and there's no excise tax nonsense. Guess what's missing? You can't have a Subtitle C, wages, employment taxes. You can't have a notice of deficiency. Their definition excludes it, because wages is for government folks. And they don't even have to do it either when you get down to looking at it. But there is no Subtitle C. You can't get a notice of deficiency for wages, for filling out a form, a W-4, which is earned income. I got to look that one up, but it's earned income. You put it exempt. So what's our strategy? Well, the strategy is, once we give them notice and they come back and say, do it, you can give notice to the employer and tell him this is not a good thing. Because the next question you want to ask them is, who is going to act as the withholding agent? Is that you, sir? Who is the withholding agent? Somebody's got to withhold it. Somebody's got to take money out. Where is that? Withholding agent. The term withholding agent means any person, well, we'll get to the definition of that, required to deduct and withhold any tax. Okay, required. There's no to deduct and withhold any tax. And there's only, under the provisions of four Subtitle A issues. 1441 is non-resident alien, 1442 is a foreign corporation, and 1443 is a foreign organization, and 1462 is a hold harmless clause. 1461. You can sue the people that take your money, really. But you see, you have to have a couple of things done. You have to have marked a W-4, I'm exempt, because I'm not one of those. I'm not authorizing. You have to understand the term withholding agent. Who's going to act as a withholding agent? That's the question. Is that you, sir, my company? Is the IRS? Give them notice. Who's going to act as a withholding agent? Nobody's going to want to answer. See, and what they have not counted on is they think that we're going to run off to tax court, which I've done. I had to do it to prove it. Like I say, I got to prove these things. I got to have real evidence so that I got something to stand on. Well, there is a way into the tax court here. I got to find the case, find the thing here. I didn't get that up yet. And it was a case in 1963. And amazingly, it goes back, clear back to the King's Bench in 1760 in the Merry Old England. And how do we go? Because you see, they don't give solutions for non-taxpayers. Everything is geared to taxpayers, because everybody thinks they're a citizen of the United States. Of course, that has got so many so many things that are wrong with it, which we're going to get into in the second hour, or maybe this hour here yet. So many things that are wrong with it. Do you know it's a felony to claim you're a citizen of the United States? You got to give me that Title 18, 9/11. How would I prove I'm a citizen of the United States? I don't even know what the hell it is. You? Yeah, we do. What's this case? How do we get in there? This is Pittman versus the United States, not the United States of America. And it was filed into the Federal Court of Claims, a bona fide Article III court, 1963. It said so in the statute that made it. This is constitutional law. It said the very question is whether the plaintiff was a volunteer lies at the heart. So if you volunteer and fill out a Form 1040, which is called an implied in law contract, you're obtaining a benefit. Same as a mortgage. You're using somebody's credit. You signed, you want to borrow their credit. And of course, as soon as you get the loan, the house, it ain't a loan, you're borrowing their credit. They go and sell the dang thing to another outfit and discount it a couple of points because they turn your signature with their credit into money. Next thing you know, you're making payments to somebody else who ain't even who you started out with. You say, wait a minute, what was all that about? What's this bait and switch stuff? And there's people winning on because they don't have the original documents. They go into MERS, M-E-R-S or something, back in Delaware or someplace. But that's another issue. So how do we deal with this? What's our remedy? There's got to be a remedy. It's nice to know these things, but I want to be able to kick some butt and take some names. It says that the defendant, if the defendant be under an obligation from the ties of natural justice to refund, the law implied a debt which gives this action founded in the equity of the plaintiff's case as it were upon a contract. You can't have a damn debt unless there's got to be a contract. Got to be a law, which there is no law of the United States. It's very cleverly done. It's a return. We get you to sign up, and then you ask for your money back. Well, you already signed up for it, idiot. Yay! The ties of natural justice of which he spoke do not, however, impose an obligation for the protection of a mere volunteer. This is Lord Mansfield saw it. A contract implied in law is neither a contract nor tort, but a third category entirely different in nature. This is what almost everything we sign up for is implied in law. I want a benefit. Supreme Court from 1792 forward. Habern's case, Babcock case, Muskrat. If you sign up for a benefit, shut the hell up and take your benefit. You're done. Back in a minute.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hi, my name is David Merlin from takefromcaesar.us. Income is defined in the tax code. All property is a cost, including labor, according to statute. You're deprived of the provisions of Section 83 whenever you pay an income tax on your compensation. According to Section 83, only the excess over the amount paid is gross income. The government can't so much as provide an interpretation of Section 83 of its own. Get your paradigm shift and understanding today at takefromcaesar.us.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger. so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Roberts & Roberts Brokerage believes that everyone should have some of their assets in investment-grade precious metals. Roberts & Roberts has been a trusted name in precious metals for nearly 40 years. Experienced investors will appreciate our personal service and low prices. If you're new to precious metals, we can help you find the products right for you. Give us a call today at 800-874-9760 or visit us online at rrbi.co. Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, when you're serious about precious metals.
Let's just take this. Let's notice a deficiency. We're on the first page. We are just getting warmed up here. It says we have determined there's a deficiency, so it's got to be subtitle A, B, or those other, the excise stuff. Of your income tax, as shown, this letter is your notice of deficiency as required by law. What's that mean, by law? Do you already know what it means? You see, there under the question would be to ask the IRS, well, are you not under the Administrative Procedures Act? Yes or no? They're going to have to answer yes. Well, you see, we've got a slight problem here. Because do you not use the Attorney General's Manual of 1947 for the Administrative Procedures Act? Yes or no? I've got it in the, I bought the federal thing, and I forget the other one, where they still use the Attorney General's manual. So what's by law mean? So you go to these things and they explain what they're doing. It said the original draft of Section 9A, they're talking about the Administrative Procedures Act, limited the imposition of sanctions to those as specified and authorized by statute. Senate comparative print, June 1945, page 17, Senate docket, page 159, the change of the word statute, in quotation mark, to law, in quotation marks, was intentional, so as to recognize that an agency may impose a sanction or issue a substantive rule, which IRS never does, or order, if such power is authorized not only by statutes, but by treaties. What the hell are we doing? Treaties. I thought that was between countries. Court decisions, commonly recognized administrative practices, or other law. And they cite a Supreme Court case, and that's Supreme Court case 1833, does not say what the hell they're doing here. Commonly recognized administrative practices. Whoa, wow, that sounds like really good stuff, you think? So we already can blow by law out of the water. Those are questions. And then they made a determination, they want you to go to tax court. Well, let's go back to taxpayer. What the hell is a taxpayer? They're calling me a taxpayer. How did I get to be a taxpayer? What is a taxpayer? Don't I have a right to know? See, in Rappert's case, they wouldn't address it in Minnesota. Because they can't. These terms blow them out of the water. What is a taxpayer? It has a definition. You can't fill out a 1040 without being a freaking damn taxpayer. Why? Because it's individual income tax. Well, what's an individual? Oh, it's not what you think it is. It's another term. You're starting to catch on why we are in such a disadvantage, because these people, you go into these documents, they're just like the trilemma, star chamber. They want us to incriminate ourselves, number one. Number two, under the penalties of perjury. And number three, they can sanction us or whatever because we signed up for it. Individual income tax, because it says it's a Form 1040. Well, that's individual income tax. So what's an individual? I thought I were one, but maybe I'm not. This is 5 U.S.C. 552A. 5 U.S.C. 552A, then A2. The term individual means citizen of the United States or an alien lawfully admitted for permanent residence. Really? So an alien can be here? Wait a minute. What the hell's an alien got to do with the several states and all this other stuff? Nothing. You can be a citizen of the United States and have no domicile, of course, if said so. You're just sitting out there in la-la land. Really? Well, how did I sign up being a citizen of the United States? What is that? That's a felony. If I claim to be it, I'm not. So I came up with a solution. You get to find out because the courts have said that there's no elective franchise for a citizen of the United States. It's like mother is sitting up above here and looking down and said, okay, you U.S. states, when you go to vote, you can't discriminate because of race, color, religion, and that stuff. Fine. But there is no, the elective franchise is only exercised by the citizens of one of the several states. Because they're all sovereign. They're supposed to be sovereign. Foreign states to each other. Courts have said so. Black and white. So that's the first problem. I've got an individual income tax. Because under the definition of person, I got to be an individual. Because that's the definition of who they have. So anyway, term taxpayer means any person. It could be a corporation is subject to, there's a whole bunch of things on that means, liable or whole thing. It says any internal revenue tax, and there's five of them. They never want to specify what tax it is. That won't talk to you. Why? Is it subtitle A, B, C, D? There's a subtitle E, ATF stuff. Wait a minute here. You've made all of these lies, determinations, and there's no factual basis. There's essential elements to become these things. Essential elements to be a taxpayer. I got to be an individual. The essential element of being an individual, I got to be a citizen of the United States or an alien. Subject two, there's a whole bunch of laundry lists there, and in any internal revenue tax, okay, there's got to be one of those taxes, essential elements. There's got to be at least one or more of them that I'm subject to. Which is it? And if I am subject to it, who in the hell is going to act as a withholding agent? Please put it down in writing. Here's the term. Who's going to take my money and forward it? And my goal is now, once we get an understanding of all this, we put them on notice. So you say you can't say you did it. No, because they try to get around it. I've seen some of these cases on these municipalities. No, we didn't know this. Yeah, we're just dumbing rocks. Okay, well, you knew. Now, my next thing is to file into the, you cease and desist. And if you do it again, if I hear from you again, I'm going to file into the Federal Court of Claims. Because there must be a contract. There is no law that mandates me, and I'm not a citizen of the United States. So where did I sign up? You have to prove evidence. So I came up with a way of putting in the, you get your status right as a citizen of one of the several states. Alaska will take them. And then when you get certified copies under Evidence Rule 901, number 7, it's self-authenticating. So you have to provide evidence. I got first-hand knowledge of it, and I did it in a public record. And then I modify the state voter thing, which they've denied to two people in Michigan or Minnesota. And really, so I have a, quote, government called State of Minnesota, all caps, that is exercising only people that are citizens of the United States can put the government in power. Well, how does that work? This is the bottom line, the bottom of the abyss of hell. It's like Esau. Who are you? Did you sell your citizenship or not? Yes or no? A citizen of the United States has no inalienable rights from the Creator. It is the doctrine of man made up. It started in 14 Stat 27, the same rights as white citizen made for the Negroes. They memorialized it in the 14th. And, of course, they come along 2 years later and said, oh, you know, we could have naturalized those black folks. But, yeah, we didn't want to do that. We had to get set up. And then we got the 17th Amendment, and the Senate, the legislatures, they no longer, of the several states, no longer have standing in the Senate. So that's when they changed over to United States of America, a sovereign body politic versus the United States. From the beginning, clear up to 1913, all the cases were the United States or United States. From 1913 to 1916, they changed them over. Well, guess what? The only court that doesn't do that, Federal Court of Claims, and the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals. You think there might be a problem? Yes, it's in the words. But we have to wake up. It's like, and it's about these terms. We do not understand. We're made to not understand. And, of course, they say, well, you can't bring up the law. Well, wait a minute here. Let's see, I go into a trial by jury with the IRS. I can't bring up anything. Oh, let's see, we got a banker up here, and he transferred funds from here to there. What's that got to do with the price of tea? Was there a deficiency? Yes or no? What subtitle tax are we talking about? Ooh, we won't find a transcript where they bring up what subtitle of tax they're talking about, some by a lawyer. Oh, we're not supposed to. They're supposed to be all known. We don't talk about that stuff because everybody knows you're a taxpayer. Everybody knows you're a citizen of the United States. The jury in a federal, Alaska, they all have to testify. Or not? They'll say, "Is anybody here not a citizen of the United States?" People don't talk about it. They don't know what it is. That's how I got some of my misdemeanor cases that went away. These people testified to something. They don't even know what the hell they testified to. Whoa, that sounds like a good informed jury. Really. I was trying to find some of the tickets, and I, for some reason, I never made. I said I wasn't smart enough back then. It irritates me. It's taking me this long. I didn't make copy of the traffic citations that I had. But that's what you start doing. You get a cop-up. Well, let's see. Is this your signature here, sir? Does it say that under the penalties it's true? That's what they say in Alaska, as I recall. So you have a good understanding of what's on this traffic citation, and you have firsthand knowledge of it. Were you trained to fill it on the use of this citation? Well, it's got a code section here. Are you an attorney?
No.
So why are you citing a code section? What does it say?
Well, I don't know.
Well, wait a minute. You just said it's true. What are the essential elements of that statute? That's a killer. What are the essential elements? You don't know that? Spoliation of evidence. I was driving a stolen car. Did you know that? Do you know that you're working for the same people that own that automobile? Yes or no? I have the attorney in fact contract right here. The Wasilla Chevrolet puts out. That's must be signed. Yes, it must be signed. And what does it say? How come we don't know this? I went over to Chevrolet. I got to see the first time ever a live manufacturer statement of origin where it says property and then all any interest or whatever has to be on the back shown. But I get around, and I didn't realize this, and I've done it many times. I signed a special power of attorney when I bought a new car. And I bought a lot of them for my company and me. Special power of attorney. I do, by these presents, authorize name of the attorney, Wasilla Chevrolet or whoever, to act as my attorney in fact in signing my name to any and all forms necessary to transfer to a transfer of my rights, title and interest to or from the following described motor vehicle. What's a motor vehicle? That's in commerce. Definition. Isn't that amazing? Why would I do that? I didn't read any of this stuff. Dumber to Bumpkin, the farmer Bumpkin. I've signed a lot of these. Why would I give somebody the power to transfer all of my rights, title, and interest to or from this motor vehicle to somebody else? Why would I do that? Who knew? I have not a clue why I would do that. But I've done it. I guarantee you. Why? Because we don't know. People won't believe it. We don't own our car in Alaska. The Constitution says we only have a private interest in land owned or something by the government. That's why they have the permanent fund in Alaska. They take the oil off of Prudhoe Bay and they pass it out, and you have to sign up for the benefit. We don't own the land up here. They put it right in the stupid Constitution. But it's the Constitution of the state of Alaska, not the Constitution of Alaska. And, of course, we come in on equal footing with the other states, not the original states. Oh, just a single word. We're a state of the United States of America, not one of the United States of America. Two words. When Alaska came in. Starting to get an understanding of how this is how we can start to deal with the IRS big time. Like I say, if they're not going to move in the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals in Randy's case, how did they get Randy convicted? They did it with the United States of America. They did it with substitute for returns, 6020B, with forms. And there are three forms. None of them mean anything because none of them are put in the Federal Register. The bankruptcy courts will not take those substitute for returns. You have to sign your name to get it off. Does that ought to be a wake-up call right there? But we can put you in jail, but we can't write off the debt unless you sign, volunteer. Then they come back on Randy, and they want to reduce the judgment. They want his property. And, of course, they always screw around with it, and then all of a sudden, there's a summary judgment. You lose. Well, Randy filed in for the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals as the United States. The Southern District of Mississippi sent it off to the Fifth Circuit. Called up the Fifth Circuit and said, what are you doing with that? They read it. Oh, well, we got jurisdiction, though. Really? Had to put a motion in to get them to turn loose of it. Had to go back to the Southern District of Mississippi. The clerk said, well, I've been here for years. I've never seen one go to the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals. Well, guess what? It took a month to get a number from them up there, to get a case number. Then the first crack out of the barrel, the Department of Justice wants to move it back to the Fifth Circuit because it's got jurisdiction. But you know what they did? They made an appearance as representing, quote, United States, end quote, not United States of America. So the question is, how in the hell can you represent United States in one appellate court and United States of America in another one? Oops. I got to post this brief and all of the attachments we put in with it. I called up there to the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals and I said, what's our timelines here? I feel these guys out. You just got to know how to. I'm looking at the rules here and I can't find the rule. And they, well, you don't. The court hasn't asked for a response. Well, we filed one. I said, oh, here it is. Here it's 10 days. Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, if you file it within that time frame, the court will look at it. They don't want us there. Why? Because the cat would get out of the bag. And once we use the ties of natural justice, you can't have a debt without a contract. And we got to go all the way back to 1760, the King's Mints, and the common law of England. Isn't that amazing? How would the average person find this type of stuff without Westlaw? Took me a while to screwing around to find it, doing word searches. You know, I could teach somebody in Westlaw in 15 minutes how to do what I do. But of course, you got to pay $341 a month to get access to it. And you got to know what you're reading, of course, too. That takes experience. But this is the game that they're playing against all of us. Not a pretty picture. Well, I'm going to get into the immigration stuff, and I'm going to get into IRS, but I want to go in and traffic, because traffic's going to probably, I got to find this brief here. Where did I put that brief? Well, I got to go back and find this brief here. Do you have to get out of a car when they pull you over? And the answer is unequivocally, you do not have to get out of a car. And I've done it more than once, and I filed briefs on it. And if you start off with the Pennsylvania versus MIMS, M-I-M-M-S, 434 U.S. 106, 1977. Whenever an officer has an occasion to speak with the driver of a vehicle, he may also order the driver out of the car. We hold that once a motor vehicle, now that means it's commercial, has been lawfully detained for a traffic violation, the police officer may order the driver to get out of the vehicle without violating the Fourth Amendment. Well, let's go a little farther. Arizona versus Johnson. This is 129 Supreme Court 781. 129 Supreme Court 781, 2009. Once a motor vehicle has been lawfully detained for a traffic violation, the police officer may order the driver to get out of the vehicle without violating the Fourth Amendment. From the moment a car is stopped by the police to a halt at the side of the road, the police officer testified that Johnson, which was the passenger, could have refused to exit the vehicle and to submit to a pat-down. He said, I never advised him that he did not have to get out or answer my questions. Now, why would I? What's one of the couple of defenses to some of this? You ever hear of the use of force continuum? All the police have it. I used to use this against them, and I use it the one thing now, but hey, man, am I glad to see you. I want to report a stolen car. Boy, that
It's almost freaking humorous. I got around and had one of this last one did that. He pulled me, you're doing 61. And I pulled over, yay. And I said, man, am I glad to see you. And I went into this little thing, and he goes back and gives me my driver's license. And I'm getting my cell phone ready to do it. Hey, wait a minute, come back here. I want to report a stolen vehicle. He gets in his car, and he sits behind me. I said, okay, prick, pardon my French. I'm not against law enforcement. And so I sat there and just dilly-dallied around. I didn't put, of course, I don't have a seatbelt on. And I took my time, and I finally cranked her up, and I put her right up to 61 again. Same speed I was doing, and he was back there about 100 yards behind me. I said, come on, get it on, Bubba. He didn't have the nerve to do it. There's nothing. What's he going to do? Probably has do not detain in my thing, so... But I rubbed his nose in it because I'm fed up with these guys doing this nonsense. But they train them over here in Palmer. So what's this use of force continuum? I say, get out of the car. I'm in fear of my life. Why? Use of force continuum. What's your use of force continuum? What is it? What's it mean? It says here, this is, you get this stuff out of the, we never got Anchorages. They would never cough theirs up. But I got the Troopers and got Wasilla's. Proper officer response can be thought of as a continuum that includes several stages from the lowest to the highest. Officer present. Whoa! Verbal persuasion. Nope. Directions. Nope. And commands. Soft, empty hand control, or OC spray, some kind of pepper spray. OC projectiles. Hard or empty hand control. Electronic weapons and tasers. And electronic weapons and batons and deadly force. Why would I get out when you have a use of force continuum that you can escalate depending on, and we go up and read the definition of force. Force means any deliberate body impact or restraint for the purpose of gaining control of the person. And force includes pepper spray, chemical agents, electronic weapons, and deadly force. Gaining control. So, hey, I'm doing just fine here. I'm not getting out. I roll a window down just a little bit, and that's it. I challenged them over here on the Glen Highway. I had somebody with me, and they said, get out. You're under arrest. I said, for what? He said, break the window. My hands are on the steering wheel. Go for it. They back down. I don't recommend these things for everybody. I've had enough of their nonsense. There's just a few bad cops, and especially, though, when you start challenging the issue that I was doing, I had tags made up and had the UCC. I did not understand, but I gave back the tags and registration. I said, hey, well, Anchorage ordinance says government-owned or government-driven. This ain't government-owned or government-driven. I didn't know how they did it, but now I do. And once that attorney, in fact, contract is in, you have to go to the UCC and rescind that before you can get the right to travel. I'm going to get to that yet this year. I promised a couple people a couple years ago, and I never have it's just not enough of me to go around. But I'm going to do it. I'm going to give them notice, tell them to cease and desist. I can't go into Anchorage because they think I owe them $7,000. I'm going to give notice that mine is not a government-owned, government-driven vehicle. I'm going to get the affidavit in the commercial law. You have to go back and get that attorney in fact, because when it's in place, it can be resold, and that stays in effect. You have to get that canceled. You have to cancel a contract and say, look, I want my manufacturer's statement of origin back. Of course, they tell you it's been destroyed. I don't believe that in a heartbeat. Back in a minute.
I'm getting older and noticing that my body just doesn't work as well as it used to. So I like to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. Recently, I started having a nagging bicep pain, and it got so bad I couldn't even lift the weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in veins and arteries that may cause blockages. You know, after just 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone, and now I'm back in the gym full strength. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim has superior oral chelation action that helps promote cardiovascular health. So to learn more, go to angioprim.com. That's A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M.com. Or talk to a trained consultant. Call Angioprim toll free at 877-882-7221. You'll feel better with more energy. Call 877-882-7221 or go to the website angioprim.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.